Are you ready? Sea of Red, it's time for another episode of Fireside Chat.
We're coming off a devastating loss to the Hurricanes tonight, but Matt and I are back to chat Flames hockey with you. Can you believe, Matt, that we lost 4-1 to the Canes tonight?
That wasn't the same team that we saw in Calgary a couple weeks ago. Completely different in how they played.
That's a team that looks like they're an NHL hockey team.
Yeah, the game that we played against them in Calgary, they looked barely like an AHL team. So tonight they were actually quite good. If they continue to play like that, I don't think they'll be at the bottom of the standings when all's said and done.
I think that as well, the Flames were not playing their best. They looked like they were tired after a long 10-game road swing. So I don't think we can give all the credit to the Hurricanes on this one.
5 games on the road.
Sorry, 10 days, yeah. 5 games.
And yeah, they look gassed. And the Flames still are having issues with being sick and all that. It's not an excuse, but like, I've been going through the same flu bug of late myself, and yeah, I don't even know how they're playing if they have what I have.
Yeah, and I mean, that's partly why I think we're seeing more guys coming in and out of lineup too, is probably extra precautions. They have the extra bodies, so why not use them?
Exactly. And like, Sven Berchi wasn't in the lineup tonight, and they had to bring Reinhardt in, who played rather well, actually, but it's just frustrating, because you'd like to see everybody be able to be at their best and have their success or failures based off of that, not having to fight the flu while trying to solidify a job long-term up here.
You know, I said it last week, though. I mean, we've been in this position before where we have a lot of our roster decimated, and generally it happens for the Flames, it seems, near the end of the season when we really need those last couple points to push for the playoffs. So if it's going to happen, I'd rather it happens now and we can get it over with and use the healthy bodies we have, and then once everyone's healthy, you know, next month or later this month, move forward from there.
True. And like, once we start getting the Colborns and Mason Raymond and Backlund and Stajan back in the lineup, that will definitely help, especially with the very good play of Juris and Granlund. It'll help move other players out that weren't as good in their last few games.
And I think that a lot of these young kids, there has been enough of a body of work for them up here that we can see what they look like when they're healthy. It's not like these kids are coming up sick and playing the whole time sick. I mean, if you look at the kids that are up here, there's enough of a body of work that the brass knows what they're evaluating.
Yeah, exactly. And with, say, Josh Juris, he's been up here almost a full month now, and Granlund, this was his 6th game, so we're starting to fill in all the blanks when it comes to those players.
Yeah, for sure. So on this road trip, as much as tonight's game wasn't the result we were hoping for, we are 3-2 on this trip. We won against the Montreal Canadiens, we won against the Capitals, which I thought was a surprising win. We lost to the Lightning. We beat the Florida Panthers in a matinee game, and I actually thought that was quite a fun game to watch with 6 goals, though I was a little bit concerned that we had 4 scored against us.
Yeah, that was a bonkers game.
It was one of those things like, should I be more happy this team has scored 6, or should I be more disappointed that 4 have been scored against us?
Especially to Florida, who at that point had only scored 16 goals all season to that point.
And then tonight we lost 4-1 to the Carolina Hurricanes, and now we'll be back at home on Thursday against the Coyotes for another 5-game home swing.
Gotta love this schedule. Long homestand, long road trip, long homestand.
I know that the Flames are flying out of Raleigh tonight, which is nice, because it'll give them 2 full days then at home, Tuesday and Wednesday, before they have to play again, which is probably a good thing to get back in the swing of things. And even then, we have a fairly easy schedule. We have at least a day between every game. We have a Saturday game and then not another one until Tuesday. So I think that they'll be able to reacclimatize themselves, but it almost seems like once you do, you're back on the road again.
Yeah, and at least they are getting a little bit of a break in comparison to their schedule thus far. Like, they've been pretty much playing every other day for almost the entire season. So even getting an extra couple of days this week off will help.
Oh, for sure. And the Flames' record as it sits now is 9-6-2 on the season, which puts us fourth in the West and tied for eighth in the NHL. And I think you were noting earlier today when we were looking at the standings that even though the Flames are technically in the playoffs right now, they're only in by 3 points.
Yeah, and Chicago's played 2 less games and they're in 9th. So even though the Flames have been at their best all season, they're still just barely in the playoffs. And they've played multiple games more than pretty much everybody else.
Yeah, if we look at the Western Conference standings right now, the Flames are in 4th at 20 points, tied with Nashville at 3rd for 20 points. And the 8th place team is San Jose, who has 18 points. So, really a tight race in the West. I mean, the last place team, which is Dallas, has 12 points. And somehow Dallas and Colorado are below Edmonton in the standings, which I don't think anyone expected this year.
No, they should be embarrassed for themselves. Like, really? How are you worse than Edmonton? Like, I can understand Buffalo and Carolina and that being worse.
Well, hold
on.
To be fair, Colorado is equally as bad as Edmonton because they're tied for 13 points. Dallas is 1 point behind them.
Give them a round of applause here.
We got to be accurate. They're below them in the standings, but Colorado is equally as bad as them. And Colorado's played one more game than Edmonton, too.
Yeah, I don't understand how a team that is as deep as both Dallas and Colorado can be that bad.
You know, it's interesting, though, because, you know, like Dallas and Colorado, I think, were both pegged to be in the playoff hunt this year. Calgary was not pegged to be in the playoff hunt, so it's interesting seeing some of the movement that we've had in the standings so far this year. And it really asks the question, are the Flames for real? Or is this just a flash in the pan? Is this going to go away? What do you think?
Honestly, as good as they've been, they've also had insane hot streaks from a lot of the players on the team. And even some of the kids that have come in have contributed. And I don't know if that's sustainable over the long term. The Flames have been largely outshot and outchanced in pretty much every game this year. So I'm not really a big fan of Corsi and Fenwick, because I don't think it's a complete statistic. But those both show that like Calgary has basically been lucky to even have the results that they have thus far. So it can happen where a team can overperform throughout an entire season, but it's lucky more so than anything.
So for those that don't know, Fenwick is a advanced stats system. Can you explain a little bit about it for those that don't know it?
It's basically tabulating all the shots for each team and measuring the differential and all that. So if you're generating more offensive chances, you have more of a chance of winning. That's all.
You know, I think that where the Flames have an advantage looking at other teams, I think the Flames are getting off to a hot start. And as much as I don't think they're going to stay at this kind of a pace or, you know, this kind of a 9-6-2 record, if we use the same numbers going forward, I think that they're going to amass a lot of points early. And I think that they're going to be able to stumble a few times and have some points built up on other teams. Even though it is going to be a close race, you know, 2 and even 4 points can be the difference between being in or out. I also think that the Flames have an advantage because they're deep. They have a deep roster of kids in the AHL that when we do get hurt, we're not just bringing in a guy to fill a spot, as we're seeing with Juris and Granlund. These are guys that can compete at this level.
True. We're not as bad as both of us thought we were before the season started, but if you compare us to the teams that should be realistically in the playoffs when you get to the end of the season and you compare rosters, like, I don't see how the Flames are going to be able to overcome that unless all of Gaudreau, Brody, Giordano, Monahan, Hudler, etc. all continue their hot streak right through the end of the year. And like Giordano's one of the top 5 scorers in the NHL. Which could happen, but I don't know.
To me, when I look at the Flames and when I really kind of analyze the games that we've seen, This seems to be, as you mentioned earlier, a collection of guys in a hot streak. It doesn't necessarily seem like the most cohesive team out there. It seems like a bunch of guys in a hot streak. And I'm like you, I worry about when those hot streaks come to an end. But I think we've got a bunch of top forwards out too. So by the time those forwards come back, that's going to be a resurgence of guys, especially guys, looking to keep a spot on the team. I'm not saying they're going to keep up this pace all year, but I don't think that we're going to be as bad this year as a lot of people thought. I think if we fall out, the furthest we're going to fall is 10 or 11.
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to be in the top 5 picks this year. Things would really have to screw up, really. But I don't see us being able to really be that close to a playoff spot once the season's over. We'll see.
And there's a debate that goes on with that of people say, well, we're in the rebuild. We want to get the highest pick possible so that way we get a good player for the rebuild. But to me, if the Flames can push for a playoff spot, I'd rather see that. To me, that's showing progress going forward that, hey, we have enough pieces here that we're doing well. We're not doing as poorly as we thought we were. I would rather have a team pushing for a playoff spot at this point than being absolutely terrible to make sure they get Eichel or McDavid.
True. And, if you look at the last two drafts, Monahan is the second highest point getter behind only Nathan MacKinnon, and arguably Sam Bennett's the best of the four players for last draft. So even though the Flames haven't been picking first overall, they've still been getting some very good talent. And with this upcoming draft, there are very good players, not necessarily at Bennett's level, but very good extending into the teens for the draft picks. So even if we're picking at 9 or 10 or 11, we're still going to get a really solid player.
Oh, for sure. And I think, you mentioned something important there is that the Flames are getting a lot of production out of guys we weren't expecting to. Fourth round draft picks, guys that are unsigned and we've brought in as free agents. And I think to me, if we can show that we can be competitive with this group of players that on paper doesn't look like a winner, it shows you that we can only go up from here in the rebuild.
Oh, exactly. And we're not having to rely on Sam Bennett or Emile Poirier or Morgan Klimchuk or to have the success that
we're
having.
And we're not always chasing next year so-and-so will be ready or next year. Yeah,
exactly. We're getting results from unexpected sources and to a certain extent more expected sources as well. But at least the Flames are showing that they're playing well as a team, and that's something that I don't recall Edmonton, for example, having at any point in the last few years. So it's positive, it's just gotta be patient still.
Yeah, well, and that's it. I don't think that even if we do make the playoffs, let's assume for a minute that the Flames make the top 8 in the West at the end of the year. I don't think that we're in the playoffs, the rebuild is over, we're ready to be a competitive team. To me, if we make the playoffs this year, it's by luck. And I don't necessarily know if it's the best thing for the rebuild. Sure, it gives all these guys postseason experience, but it means we're drafting lower. And I still think there's a lot of work to be done to be competitive. But if we can have that winning attitude and show that Bob Hartley can take this group of, ragtag players that we put together just kind of as leftovers from everyone else and make it to the playoffs, I'm really excited to see what's going to happen in 3 years when we have a team on paper that should be in the playoffs.
Yeah, and if you look at the last time the Flames came out of a rebuild back in 2004, yeah, they made the playoffs and they were legitimately good enough to make the playoffs, but they overachieved there and it completely restructured on how they adjusted, and instead of adding slowly to continue their rebuild, they tried to mortgage some of the future by getting guys like Tanguay in there, and they waffled for a bit, not being bad enough to get a good draft pick or good prospects, but not good enough to actually win anything. So if the Flames do end up contending for a playoff spot this year, I wouldn't want to see them mortgage the whole future just to make another step or two forward.
Well, and I think that's a big difference between now and 04, is in 04 this team had been poor for so long that, I mean, the team really had to, as an organization, as a marketing vehicle and a business, of say, okay, we've got this competitive team, let's run with it and try to, you know, get all the money we can out of the fans here. And I think you're right, there's a fine balance there. As much as we want to say we're in a rebuild, if all of a sudden they make it to the playoffs, it's like, well, fans are going to say, well, we expect that year in and year out now.
Yeah, and then, like, if, say, like, next year the Flames were to suck following that, then, oh, well, we should fire the coach and, you know, get rid of the GM. And, like, that's not fair either, because you had success before you were ready to have success.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say I don't want to see the team in the playoffs, because to me, anytime you can make the postseason is a positive step forward for your team. But I think it's a long shot for the Flames to finish in the top eight. But I think we're going to see enough upward trajectory from last year that everyone's going to be very happy.
Yeah, exactly. That, like, it, already they've taken enough steps forward that it's been, in my mind, a successful season. Like, just seeing the progress of Gaudreau and Monahan, like, they're both establishing themselves as legitimate top-line players. That's good. So, you know, if they can continue adding to that over the next 65 games, then that's even better.
What I'm really liking is last year's Flames fans, I feel like we got excited about things because we needed something to get excited about. And even though this team was not very good and did finish low, everyone was so excited by their progress because I think in a hockey market like Calgary, we need that. And this year, I love it that the Flames are giving us something tangible to get excited about.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the problems that the mere fact of being in a Canadian market is the fans want to see a winner right now. And, like, I've heard some people complaining that, oh, we're not doing as good as we should, and already
spend more money and get a superstar in here and let's, you know, pick this up.
Exactly. And realistically, we're like a year and a half into a complete teardown rebuild. And usually those take at least 4 years to put the pieces back together properly in order to build a reliable playoff team. And, you know, like, yes, it sucks that we're losing type of thing, but it's part of the process. And if you kneecap yourself by, say, like, trading a first round pick for a immediate help guy, well, is that beneficial long term? Like, it's sort of like what the Ottawa Senators did with getting Bobby Ryan. They traded two of their top prospects plus the 10th overall selection to Anaheim for Ryan, and then they proceeded to suck last year, and they finished with the 10th overall pick, and the Ducks used that to select Brett Ritchie. And, you know, that they could have used a player like that, and they could have used Stefan Noesen and Silfverberg in their lineup instead of Bobby Ryan, but instead they're still waffling in perpetual rebuild instead of just committing to being bad for a bit and moving forward.
I think you said it well there. We're about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, depending on how you look at it, into this rebuild. And you and I have said in the past, we think this is going to be a 4 to 6 year progress. I think we've kind of settled at 5 as a reasonable number. And to me, if we look at that year and a half to 2 years so far, we've seen nothing but upward trajectory. And if we keep moving upwards at the same pace we are now, the Flames are going to be a force to be reckoned with in 5 years.
Oh, yeah. And there has been literally nothing but positives from, like, even with injuries and stuff, other players are stepping up. So if they continue with down this road of continually getting better, like, in 4 or 5 years, they could be a legitimate threat like Anaheim and Chicago and LA have been in the last couple of years. So that's what I think all Flames fans would want. So it just sucks right now, that's all.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, as much as you're saying it sucks now, it doesn't. We're watching a great
team.
Oh,
no. No, you know what I mean, though. Like, if we bottom out is what I'm getting at. Like, not that, like, right this second. We're actually great now. It's just if we do bottom out and finish in, like, the bottom eight type of thing.
And to me, even if the Flames, let's say the worst happens and the Flames just stink up the league from this point on, and somehow we end up playing worse hockey than Edmonton, Dallas, and Colorado right now, at least we can say that there was a fun portion of the season to watch as fans.
Yeah, exactly. And even then, you just have to look at the progress of all the kids and see how the Bill Arnolds and right through to the Monahans and how they play.
Well, even outside the kids, I mean, let's talk about some of the veterans that are having a good year. So we talked last year about Giordano and Brody, arguably the top defensive pairing in the league right now. And two guys that if you would look at their pedigree and their previous stats, you would not think would be having as good a year as they did. Gio had a great year last year, too, but you would not think this would be probably the top pairing in the NHL.
No. In the beginning of training camp, like I was remarking to one of the people down there that at Winsport, that Giordano and Brody looked like they didn't even miss a game between April and then, and like they've even been better since the beginning of training camp, and Giordano's now in the top five in the NHL in points. Like, who would have ever thought that a Flames defenseman would be, you know, just a few points behind Crosby in the point totals at any point in the year?
For sure. And I think, you know, those things are promising too, that even these veterans who, I mean, you know, Giordano's always been a good defenseman, but never been, I don't think in a lot of people's mind, a top, you know, tier number one guy that you would want on every team if you were building one. But I think this year he's really established himself as that really top tier defenseman, and getting that kind of play from a guy who's 31, who's, you know, really been a Flame his whole career. He went to Russia for one year, but has really been a Flame forever, and letting him kind of do his thing and see him develop, that's positive as well. It's not just all the kids. I think sometimes we got to look back at the veterans and see what they're doing as well.
Oh, yeah. It's not like you're being disappointed by the play of even other veterans like Russell or Mason Raymond, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're doing well as well.
The one guy that surprised me is Sean Monahan. I think everyone was expecting the famous sophomore slump from him, and at the beginning of the year, he did look like he was slumping. But right now, he's 17 games played, 6 goals, 5 assists for 11 points, and he's plus 1. In the last week, maybe 2 weeks, I've thought that he's been one of the best players consistently on the ice.
Oh, yeah. And he's always seems to be generating chances and in the right areas. And, you know, anytime you have a player that's on pace for around 50 points, like, that's a positive, especially a second-year player like Monahan.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, he might not be scoring as many goals as some other guys, but he's doing all the right offensive things. He's doing things right, and he's moving the puck around. He's, you know, making sure that that puck is always moving forward down the ice. And as a forward, even if you're not always putting the puck in the net, that's what they need to be doing. He's not having huge glaring weaknesses in his game.
Yeah, and like one of the critiques of him last year was that he wasn't really getting any assists, and he's only now 7 away from matching his season last year. So now that he's getting better line mates to play with, he's more able to find them.
Yeah, last year he had 34 points in 75 games. He had 22 goals, 12 assists. And this year, again, in 17 games, he has 6 goals, 5 assists. So he's on par to do better numbers than last year. And I've also thought that he looks like a more complete player this year. Last year, he was very much, in my eyes anyways, he was the offensive forward. And I saw a couple times where he would get caught coming back into his own zone or trying to play the defensive game. And this year, he's not perfect, but he's looking more like a complete all-around forward right now.
Yeah, and it's important for his development moving forward to become a complete two-way threat. More or less, like, if he could become a 6'3" Damon Lankow type player, where he's just exceptional at both ends, that would be a positive for Calgary. I'm hoping that his stellar play thus far continues and he keeps building on it and working on the things that he is deficient in.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, to me, that's the thing I was worried about with him last year. Seeing that he didn't have that defensive game, I was worried we're going to have another Jerome McGinley on our hand, a guy who's great on one side of the ice, not so much on the other. And that wouldn't be able to be coached there. Now, I know that there's some debate as to if Jerome could have been coached better or not. Let's not get into that, but I'm glad to see that. Yeah, I think Damon Lakehound is a great comparison there.
Mm-hmm. And, like, especially for Stanley Cup caliber teams, you need your centers to be the best defensive players on each line, and Monahan needs to be that. Yes, you'd like him to score 40 goals and all that as well, but to me it's more important that his defensive game is top-notch, because realistically we're going through this rebuild so we can win a cup down the road, and it's a lot better to have, you know, the players necessary through the draft than needing to go, oh, well, we need a good defensive forward now, because all our picks sucked in that regard.
Yeah, and I think, too, the Flames are showing that even though we might... Yeah, I mean, we need the picks. We don't necessarily need top-line picks. We're able to do a lot with lower-end picks, too. But yeah, we definitely can't not have those picks or have those picks totally fail on us.
Exactly. Like, it's one thing, like, to get a winger that's, like, a one-way guy, sort of like a Ginla, but especially with the centers, like, you'd need them to be good overall players.
For sure, and I think that we can give Bob Hartley a lot of credit for what we're seeing so far from a lot of these guys' development. It seems like Hartley's really finally got his system between him and the farm team, and he's finally got things set up the way we want, and I think we're seeing a lot more out of some of these guys because of Bob Hartley.
Mm-hmm. He's definitely been probably the perfect coach for a team that's going through a rebuild, because he does work with the kids rather effectively.
I know that he wouldn't get it, even if we did make the playoffs, but to me, if I look around the league at the coach who I think so far has had the most impact on their team, Bob Hartley's that guy, and I think that because of that, I mean, that is the qualification for the Jack Adams Award. So I know he's not going to get it if we're not in the finals, but to me, he's been the guy who's been the most impactful on his team this year, so far.
I agree wholeheartedly. The Flames really should sign him to a contract sometime this soon.
We don't know that there's not talks in the work already.
Oh, I know. It's just you want to see that get taken care of sooner than later.
And you and I have talked about this in the past. I think we both agree that Bob Hartley is still the right guy going forward in this rebuild. Has your mind changed on that?
Oh, no. Put it this way, like, if the Flames at some point start to plateau, then maybe you look for a different coach. But for now, he's definitely doing a great job. Like, if, say, like, down the road we're getting into the playoffs and we can't get over the hump, well, then you go and find a coach that, like, a Quenneville or something to get you over the finish line.
I think the different coaches kind of have their specialties, and I think we're seeing that Hartley's specialty, and credit to Jay Feaster. I know he gets a lot of flack, but he's the one that brought Bob Hartley in, so credit to him there. I think we're seeing one of Bob Hartley's specialties is the rebuild, and I don't think he's necessarily going to be the right coach to be here in, you know, 5 years' time, 6 years' time, as we are becoming that competitive team in the playoffs. But yeah, I think until that time, as this team is still in the upward trajectory, I think Hartley needs to stay here.
Yeah, until we plateau, then you look elsewhere, but...
And at that point, you may even look within your system, too.
Exactly, like maybe Huska does a awesome job in Adirondack, and you promote from within, who knows?
Yeah, or you might even bring Martin Jelena into the head coaching role.
Yeah, like, that's a debate for season 8 or so of Fireside Chat.
There you go. Well, I'm looking forward to having that debate with you in a few years. Another guy that we both thought was not going to make this team and did, and I think is surprising everyone, is Johnny Gaudreau. Do you see any stopping Johnny Hockey at this point?
No. He's figured out the NHL game, and in that Florida game, I noticed the Panthers defenseman on the Jones goal was being very in tight with Gaudreau, and that didn't work. So in the third period, they gave him a little more space, and that didn't work. The other teams are just going to have a real bear of a time trying to contain him.
Well, I think, too, there's probably a lot less footage of him out there, so it's harder for teams to coach to him.
Yeah, well, even with good coaching, superior talents will find a way, and Gaudreau is a superior talent.
Every time I see Gaudreau on the ice, he looks to me like an NHL player. I mean, he's still making mistakes, everyone does, but he doesn't seem like a guy who, as we thought, needs the AHL seasoning, which is awesome to see.
Yeah, I don't think he'll ever see an AHL game unless he's on a rehab conditioning stint at some point.
Yeah, I could also see them sending him down if Adirondack made the postseason this year.
Well, that's different.
Yeah, no, I think that he's definitely here to stay. I don't think that there's going to be any question of him going up or down. I do still believe, and I said this last week, that we may not see the same production from going forward. He's not used to an 82-game season, so I think he's still going to look like an NHL player, but we might see a little bit of a dip in him as he starts to get tired around January, February.
Yeah. Once he gets past the usual, like, 45-50-game mark for him, I think that's when you'll start to see a little bit of a dip.
And at the same time, he's not our only college player. I mean, we've got Hanowski, we've got Agostino, we got a lot of these guys that are coming out of college. So I would imagine that the Flames training staff has already kind of looked at that and said, how can we work with all these guys, both the NHL and the AHL level, to make sure they keep their stamina up and their strength up and that sort of thing. It'd be different if there was one guy and you're trying to coach this one guy, but considering the amount of guys, Van Brabrent, that all come out of college, I have to imagine the Flames have some sort of a textbook for how do we get the guys through an 82-game season.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the fact that the Flames have, I think, 9 or 10 different college players in their system, so...
Yeah,
you would definitely need to have some sort of system in place. Otherwise, you're just going to have a bunch of floundering guys that'll hit the wall at the 50-game mark.
Which, yeah, as Flames fans, that's the last thing we want to see. It's half this team running out of gas.
Mm.
So one player that we didn't see in the lineup tonight against the Hurricanes was Sven Berchi. He finally got the call-up. He's played 4 games up here since he got called up. And I think we could probably all agree when we say he hasn't been the brightest of the call-ups. There's been a lot of talk about Sven, and a lot of people are talking about, you know, do we cut our losses after this year? I've been thinking a lot about this, and I think that you have to sign Sven after this to at least one more contract. He's going to come off his entry-level contract. Even if he's a good call-up guy and a good AHL guy, there's no reason not to sign him to another deal in, say, the 600-700 range. Probably after this with a 2-way clause on it, or even if not, we can afford not to. Do you think that after this we just give up on Sven if he keeps going at the rate he's doing?
Well, the thing is that this is his last season of being waiver ineligible. So,
yeah.
Like, at the end of the training camp next year, if he doesn't make the team, we will have to place him on waivers. And realistically, if he doesn't make the team, then we'll be seeing a Joel Colborne-esque trade with him, because some team will offer a 4th or 5th round pick for him. But yeah, he definitely needs to step it up a bit. He hasn't, like, he has been sick, so there is a small excuse there. But excuses, you know.
And I think once he's healthy, he has more to prove than a lot of these guys. I think if they're looking at sending somebody back to Adirondack, his name's going to be at the top of that list right now.
Oh, yeah. He's, in my mind, he's the first cut, and then it's Setoguchi after that.
But I don't think, to me, that even if Backlund keeps going like this, even when he's healthy, I don't necessarily think you get rid of him. I think you have to give him another shot after this, even if it does result in, you know, moving him out for a 4th or a 5th rounder. I don't think you can just cut, especially if you look at who some of the guys the Flames have taken chances on in the past. I don't think you can just say, well, after this, get out of here, go find somewhere else to play.
Yeah. And realistically, I think even if he's waffling for a large portion of this season and early in next year, I think the Flames would probably still just keep him at the NHL level to see if he can turn it around before giving up on him. But yeah, the onus really is on him to pick up his own game. And you can see the skills there. And in his last game, he actually was looking like he was coming around. It's just you have to put the puck in the net at the end of the day.
Yeah, Berchi's making almost $900,000 this year, and he's an RFA at the end of the year, so we're not going to lose him to unrestricted free agency. I've been thinking a lot about the kind of career I think he's going to have, not necessarily the type of player he is or who he plays like, but I can see his career being very similar to that of Jamie Lundmark. Jamie Lundmark was a first-round, ninth overall pick by the Rangers, and he played for the Rangers, the Coyotes, the Flames, the Kings, the Leafs, so he was all over the league, and he kind of jumped between the NHL and the AHL, and I mean, that's a guy who was clearing waivers left and right, but teams kept bringing him in because he was a good replacement hand.
Yeah, and if he doesn't progress, that's a good comparable in my mind. It's one of those things that there's no definitive answer on what Sven Berchi is right at this point, and he can go either way. He could just be the new Jamie Lundmark of the future, or he could turn it around and become a solid top six forward. You just don't know.
And I think that in this organization, the way that it looks now and the way we can predict it to look 2, 3, 4 years from now, there's a role for both. Would we like him to be a top six forward? Oh, of course. I mean, you know, he's the homegrown guy, that sort of thing. But I think there's a role for the Jamie Lundmark as well.
Realistically, if he doesn't pan out, we still have a whole bunch of other really top-end players. So it's not the end of the world. It's not a death knell to our rebuild if he ends up being our version of Magnus PRV.
You know, I think that's an interesting way to put it, though. I mean, we've got a player like Josh Juris who's undrafted, who's looking NHL ready. And then we have a top draft pick like Sven, who is not looking as hot as we want him to. And I think that's almost what you need to be getting out of the organization, is for every one top pick that isn't panning out. I mean, Sven's a first round pick. If you can supplement that somewhere with a surprise player, everything's going to even out in the end.
Exactly. And ideally, you would have Sven turn it around, and then you'd have the benefit of both. But, you know, life doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
And I think, too, if you look at the Flames drafting over the last 10, 15 years, Sven is definitely not the worst player here. And I think he's getting a lot of the heat just because we're simply seeing such good play from other players.
Mm-hmm.
But if we weren't, I mean, Sven is the guy we were all expecting to be the first call-up because we weren't expecting to see such great play from some of these guys. So I think in a way he's unfairly being criticized based on what other people are doing, but you know, I mean, he's definitely not the worst first round pick. I've heard people say he's a bust, and we've had a lot bigger busts in this organization.
Oh yeah. Tons of really terrible picks.
So even if he can project to be the next Jamie Lundmark, he's still on target to be a good Flames pick.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't necessarily say it was a good pick if he turns out to be a Lundmark, but he wouldn't be a terrible...
Well, but to me, a good pick is anyone that's seen constant NHL duty. And if you look at Lundmark, he was maybe not with one organization, but he was usually playing some portion of pretty much every season in the NHL. So is it what I'd expect from a 13th overall pick? No. But I think anytime you got a guy who's constantly playing NHL duty, which I think Sven could be, it's not a bad pick.
Yeah.
Maybe not a good pick. Maybe I used the wrong word there, but it's not as though this guy's a bust or a flop.
Yeah. Ideally, he'd figure it out, but even if he doesn't, it's not the end of the world. So.
No, and that's why I think I would give him another contract after this.
Oh, yeah.
Give him 1, 2, or 3 more years to try and figure it out and then make that decision if we want to keep him going or not.
Yeah. To me, signing him beyond this year is a no-brainer. It's just, what do you do with him beyond that? And maybe you end up trading him like the Leafs did with Joel Colborne, or you keep him up in the NHL even if he doesn't earn it, and see if he can figure it out at the NHL level, because that's happened before. Or you just put him through waivers and lose him. I don't know. It's just...
I also would not be surprised if Sven was not wearing a Flames jersey at the end of this year. I think he's still an attractive enough piece to somebody out there that we might see him tossed in as part of a deal to get something else done this year.
Yeah, New Jersey gets frustrated with Adam Larson, I could see that being a feasibility of a trade where, okay, each team has a struggling top-end prospect. They have a ton of good defense, not so much in the forward ranks. We don't have any top-end defensemen coming through. Might be a good fit. I could see something like that happen.
I could see something like that. I could also see something like maybe the team decides that they want to move Glenn Cross and they toss Berchi in as well to get a better return.
It would depend on the parameters of the trade, really.
Yeah, but I think if you're looking at a lot of the farm players who have value, most of them I wouldn't want to move because I think they are too valuable, this team. And I think if you're looking at guys that have value and will get you a return, Sven's kind of, at least right now, on that cusp of, okay, we could afford to move this guy and not have a significant impact to our depth chart.
Yeah, exactly.
So we hope that he's going to get better. We hope that we're going to see something kind of spark in him, but looking at the realism of what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, you have to be realistic. And with his results, you know, you'd like to coddle him and hope that he figures it out, but at the end of the day, there are a whole bunch of other players in the organization that are showing a lot more.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to them to be supplanted by a guy just because, oh, he was a first round pick. And it's up to Sven to step it up. And that's in between his years, and there's not really much anybody can do. Now, ideally, he would be able to figure it out and becomes the player that he should be, but at the end of the day, you have to go with who's the better player, and if that's Sven, that's Sven. If not, then it's somebody else.
Yeah, no, for sure, and I think you're right. We're not in a position where we need to give this guy more chances than he deserves. We're lucky that we're in a position that we can give this guy only the chances he deserves, and we don't need to give him a lot more. We don't need to say this is our only, you know, star player on the farm, so he's going to get every call-up.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, we've seen Ferland got recalled, Granlund and Juris all before him, and they've all performed a lot better. Even Ferland, who only played two periods, played a lot better than what Berchi's done thus far. So,
but hopefully those will also be a motivator for Sven to say, look at what these guys are doing. I have to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's all we can hope. We can hope that he does well, and we'll see over the coming week how he looks, if he's playing any games this week.
Yeah. Well, this will be a season-long thing, I believe, to monitor how his progress is.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be here all season. I think he's going to be sent back.
Like, monitoring in Adirondack to see if he's starting to tear that league up or not.
Yeah. You know, I'm starting to feel bad for Adirondack, because just as they were starting to get hot, all their top stars would be moved out of there.
Well, the thing is that they're actually on a 3-game winning streak since everybody's been recalled, so go
figure. I've noticed that, yeah. I've been watching the last 3 games. So who knows? Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's almost a chance for a coach to say, look, we need people to step up now. And as you start to get those guys hot and you start getting your stars back, it'll make your team even better.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adirondack has the benefit of the Flames having a really deep farm system. So even though we've taken their top 4 forwards, they still have another 5 or 6 that are really good. So,
and I think even outside of that, we saw a lot of players this year that were brought to training camp that the Flames didn't have on contract. So I think that we may see, like, I know last year Conroy was saying that the team got decimated and he didn't know where to go to get additional players when they ran out. So they had a short bench. So I think you might see this year that they've got these players, they've already scouted, they've looked out at camp, and they can say, okay, we're one man short, let's pull this guy in on a professional tryout agreement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
Because we already know what we've got there. You know, a guy like a Jason Fram or somebody who we've looked at and we're bringing in that way.
Well, not him, because he's in the WHL right now.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, that's true.
But I know the point you're trying to make.
Yeah. They've looked at a lot of guys. I mean, we had, what, 70 guys at training camp this year?
Mm-hmm.
And we can only ever have 50 contracts?
Yeah. Well, that familiarity will definitely help if there are any other problems with either roster, because I think Adirondack's down to 12 forwards now.
Yeah, and I haven't looked at how Colorado's doing the ECHL affiliate, but I'm looking at their roster, and they've got some guys that have been around the ECHL for a while, so some guys like Daryl Bootland, Curtis Jettig, guys that Kent Simpson, even guys that they could call up for a couple games if they run into issues. You know, some solid farmhands that can help the Adirondack Flames out if they run into trouble as well.
Yeah, depth is the most important thing in a rebuild.
Want a bit of a happier note with players. Giordano was set tonight to break a Flames record and didn't make it, but he's the first defenseman since 91. I believe Al MacInnis holds the record of 4 consecutive multi-point games.
Yeah, for a defenseman.
And if he would have got a multi-point game tonight against the Hurricanes, he would have beaten MacInnis's record. So when we've got a guy in a rebuild who's looking at MacInnis-type numbers in one category or another, that tells you we've really got something special on this team.
Yeah. Well, if Giordano keeps this up all year, I think he's a lock for the Norris Trophy.
Which I would love to see. I'd love to see the Norris Trophy go to a defenseman of a team that's probably not in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the hardware, it's generally distributed pretty much among the 16 teams that made the postseason. So I'd love to see if he could get the Norris, and if the Jack Adams could go to Hartley. That would be a great year for the Flames.
Well, plus the Calder for Gaudreau. Jeez. You know, you can't leave that one out.
No, that's true. We could have that would be a heck of a year. I mean, even if, you know, you look back at the year and nothing else, the Flames walk away with 3 pieces of hardware.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
That really shows that we've done something right there. Well, Matt, before we sign off tonight, do you want to give us a quick look at what's been going on in Adirondack?
Yeah, this weekend the Adirondack Flames won both their games, and they won again tonight as well. So they've been on a 3-game win streak. They've been turning it around defensively. They're still getting some rather inconsistent goaltending from Yanni Ortio, which it might be getting to the point where you might look to not have him play anymore. But Emile Poirier, on a positive note, has returned to the lineup, and in his first 4 games, he has 3 goals and 2 assists. So that's very good. And watching those games, Poirier has been the best Adirondack Flame. Even with all the other players that have since been recalled, he's been by far the best. And that if he had been back a week or so earlier than he was, I think he would have got the recall for tonight's game instead of Reinhardt. He's just been that impressive. The Flames do look to have a special player in him, so that's a very positive thing.
I've been watching the games this past week. I watched the 2 games against the Bulldogs. I was kind of flipping back and forth to the Americans game tonight, and I watched the Comets game on the 1st. And one player that I was really impressed with over the past week was Bill Arnold. We know that going into the season, I was worried that he would not be able to kind of come out on his own and try to be somebody's sidekick. And Arnold, to me, has shown quite a bit of, I guess, development there. He's got 7 points in 13 games, and I think he's been one of the best guys in the ice this past week. Also, Bryce Van Beberent has been grabbing my eye when I've been seeing him. He's doing a lot better than I expect him to be doing this year.
Mm-hmm. And another player that has been exceeding even my expectations was Ryan Culkin. He has 8 points in his last 7 games in Adirondack, so that's a...
And he's a defenseman.
Yeah, that's a very impressive thing. I think he's 1 or 2 points behind Ferland for the team lead, so...
Yeah, Ferland has 9 points and Culkin has 8.
So, as long as the Flames are getting positive steps forward from a large portion of their prospects, like they have been, that's a good thing. It's when you start seeing players stall out, sort of like what Sven Berchi has been, you get concerns on whether that player is going to have a future. Say, like, even a guy like Mark Kundari, he's kind of plateaued himself, so it's one of those things where you can't keep the roster spot there for them forever.
Yeah, no, I have not been impressed with what I've seen with Kandari so far. I'm also disappointed so far by what I've seen from Seeloff.
He's been okay, but
I'm expecting more from him this year, considering he's healthy and ready to go right at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, he hasn't played in a year, so I'm giving him more of a benefit of the doubt, but yeah, he's been a little bit iffy-ish. Like, there's been better defensemen out there than him.
Another guy that's doing about what I expected, or perhaps a bit lower, is David Wolf. He hasn't been a huge force there, but he's kind of been playing the role I expected him to play.
Yeah, he's a good physical player. He can chip in a little bit of offense.
He's got 4 points in 10 games, 2 goals, 2 assists.
Yeah, if you're expecting him to be a top 6 forward, I think you're going to be extremely disappointed. But down the road, if he can even become an NHL player and like a solid fourth line guy for Calgary, that would be awesome. And realistically, that, I think, is, like, his ultimate ceiling.
Another guy that I've been impressed with so far, looking at the roster here in my notes, is the way that Ken Agostino has really come in and kind of embraced the AHL game, I guess. He doesn't look as lost as I thought he might. I thought he might be a step behind everybody coming from college, but I thought he's adapted well so far.
Yeah, he's been solid yet unspectacular. Like, he hasn't been driving the play offensively, but he has played well on the defensive end, which realistically, if down the road he becomes a NHL forward, he'll be more like a third line type guy anyway. So,
well, I think we've seen all the guys who are the top guys in that team. They're now wearing flaming C's. So I think, yeah, now we're seeing guys in the AHL like Kenny Agostino and Ben Hanowski getting a chance to perhaps shine a little bit more than they're going to otherwise this year.
Exactly. And with the guys, with the exception of Poirier, that are still in Adirondack, those guys are more potential third and fourth line guys. Your David Mosses, your Eric Nystroms, those types. So,
which are still important.
Oh,
you can't have a team with two lines.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And you need to have guys come up like Josh Juras who can play that role and be effective. So it'll be interesting to see with their increased opportunity over the next couple of weeks to see if they can keep up their good play and if the defensive zone coverage can help limit the shots against Ordeo, especially. I don't know what's wrong with him. He's just been really giving up a bunch of soft goals that...
But remember, he had a bad start last year. I mean, he was in the ECHL to start with last year, so maybe he's just a slow starter.
Yeah. Well, he better turn it around soon, because, you know, John Gillies is likely in his last season in the NCAA, and if he doesn't pick it up, I think he's going to be out of a job pretty soon.
I don't know if I'd write him off that quickly. I mean, you know, keep him around and make him compete with Gillies, perhaps, but I don't know if I'd write him off for having one bad year. After what we saw from him last year in the NHL, I think he's almost earned a little bit of slack.
Oh, yeah. It's holding him to the same standard that we're holding Sven Berchi to, you know,
right,
put up or shut up type of thing. So,
but we're also saying that we give Sven another chance potentially at the
NHL.
Yeah.
It's just that I'm meaning,
I
like,
wouldn't bring Ordeo up next year, but I'd keep him in the organization.
Yeah. Well, like, what I'm meaning by, like, lose his job, like, I mean the starter's job. Like, he'd be the backup to, like, what Thessian is now, where Gillies would be getting, like, 70% of the starts.
Yeah, well, I think what would probably be better would be to send Ordeo to the ECHL and let him start there, even though it's a lower league, at least to be playing.
Yeah.
Because if you got a goaltender that's not hot, the worst thing you can do is get him to sit on the bench.
Yeah, sort of like what the Flames are currently having with Rommel.
And the Adirondack Flames have 2 more games this week. They play back-to-back games this weekend against the Lake Erie Monsters, which is the Colorado Avalanche's farm team affiliate. So those are on Friday and Saturday. Friday is a night game and Saturday is a matinee game. So if you have the AHL streaming package, those will probably be worth watching. I find that the Lake Erie Monsters, every time I've seen them in the past couple of years, are always a fun team to watch.
Definitely, they're one of those top-end teams. And also with Adirondack, like even though they've struggled mightily at the beginning of the season, I do believe that with the win today, they've actually moved into a playoff spot. So despite having a rough start at the beginning of the year, it's not that big of a deal.
Well, I mean, they're on a 3-game win streak right now, so, you know, that's definitely starting to look up for them.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm correct, I believe that for one season, the Flames actually shared the Lake Erie Monsters, and they were called the Lake Erie Lock Monsters as a farm affiliate when we didn't have our own. Didn't we share them with the Hurricanes at one point?
Yeah. Wasn't it in Lowell, though?
I don't think so. Could be, but yeah. It was the whatever the Lock Monsters franchise was at the time.
Yeah. It's been, what, 7 years, 8 years now? So it's kind of hard to remember who the affiliate was back then.
We've had a few affiliates over our time. Remember the Quad City Flames with the flaming Q?
Yeah.
And then the Omaha Knights. I actually like the Knights logo.
Yeah, the Oxarbin Knights. Nebraska backwards.
Yeah, I don't even know what that's for.
It's literally Nebraska backwards.
Yeah, but why not just call them the Omaha Knights?
Because that's not that's not fun. I don't know.
I don't know. But yeah, no, I always, of all the Flames affiliates, they've had my favorite logo.
Yeah, I agree.
Because they had the knight and the plume was the back of the flaming sea, and I thought that was so cool.
Mm. Well, the Flames have had some rather boring logos in the past. Like, even the Adirondack logo, which is the Atlanta A, it's kind of boring in that it's been done.
I like they brought it back because I think there's some nostalgia there. I like that they modernized it to be the black and that sort of thing. But I still think it would have been cool if they did throwback 80s jerseys.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't quite work so well on the current stuff.
No, and maybe it's because we are Flames fans and we know the history behind it. I bet if you're a Glens Falls fan and you're not familiar with that, it probably looks cool to you.
Yeah, true.
I mean, I know there was a lot of flack when the Flames first unveiled the black flaming sea from old school fans. So I'm just looking here. You're right. It was the Lowell Lock Monsters, and that was in 2003-05. Then they moved. That was right after St. John's folded up. And they moved to Omaha, Quad Cities, Abbotsford, and now Adirondack. So since 2003, we've had 1, 2, 3, 4. We're in our fifth affiliate.
Yeah, fun times with the farm teams. That's for
and
sure.
I think that now that they have a home, I think part of the thing about stabilizing the farm is going to be staying in Glens Falls for a while. I don't think you can get the stability you need to have a good winning team if they're moving all the time. So I think you need to almost stay put for 5 years, just like, you know, you would with the Flames. These guys are moving all over the place. Guys get out of their rhythm, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, at least they're on the East Coast, so they don't have to spend 3 hours traveling all the time.
Yeah, I think that the whole Abbotsford thing was a dumb idea to start with. But
yeah. It's like, oh, let's have a cluster of teams over here, another cluster down south on the west side, and then randomly one all the way up in the far corner. It's like, what are you doing?
That's the kind of idea I'd expect Kevin Lowe to come up with.
Yeah.
Well, Matt, anything else you want to talk about Flames hockey this week?
Not really. Disappointed in the New York Rangers for getting thumped by Edmonton yesterday. What are you doing?
Nobody wins all 82, and nobody loses all 82. Edmonton's got to beat somebody better than us.
I know, but, you know, still, come on. You were in the Stanley Cup Finals last year. Have some pride. Beat Edmonton. Like, what's wrong with you?
That's all we ask, is just beat them.
Yeah.
Then beat Colorado and beat Dallas as well.
Well, I don't care as much about them.
Don't give Edmonton more points.
Exactly.
Two more games this week till we talk again. We've got on Thursday the Coyotes coming to town, and on Saturday the Senators coming to town. What do you think?
Well,
4 points on the table?
They could probably win both. They could probably lose both. So it just depends, really.
I'm going to be bold. I'm going to say that the Flames take 4 points.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I'm concerned about is the recent play of Jonas Hiller. I think he's getting a little tired from playing too much.
Just put Romo in.
Yeah. He's been rusty, too, so it's kind of iffy there.
I think with the loss tonight to the Hurricanes and a two-day break, this team's going to come out hard against the Coyotes.
Yeah.
And I think if they can beat the Coyotes, they'll be able to roll that over to the Senators. If they don't beat the Coyotes, I think that they're going to have a tough time against the Senators.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting either way.
We'll talk next Monday and see how they do, but that's my bold prediction, as the Flames are coming home with four points that are on the table.
Well, have fun, everybody, and go Flames, go.
We'll see you next week, man.
Yeah, take care.
Fireside Chat is edited by Mike Crosby and Brett Bauer. This show is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license information, visit firesidechat.ca.